Oh, yeah. And then it says in the teachings, I find this quite curious, they say don't give things obtained by the wrong livelihood. Okay? So if you've obtained them, you know, through cheating people, through stealing, through flattering people or bribing them or dropping hints or coercing. Yeah, if you do that, or, you know, hypocrisy, yeah? So any of these kinds of ways, if we procure material like that, then don't use that as gifts. Now, I've thought about this, you know, because what happens sometimes is, like, you might hear this teaching, and then you might realize, wow, I have this thing in my, you know, you hear a teaching about the five wrong livelihoods, and you think, wow, I have this incredible thing that I got basically because I dropped a hint, you know, or because I gave them kind of a present so that they would give me something back. And then we feel like this sense of regret, like it really isn't right for me to have this because I did obtain it by wrong livelihood. And then we feel we want to give it away. Yeah. Are you following my line of thinking? Now, to me, I'm giving my personal opinion here. To me, I think that would be quite good if somebody gave that away. You know, if we really realize we got it because of wrong livelihood, and then we feel it's not right for me to have it, it's better for somebody else to have it. I feel that with that kind of motivation, it's okay to give it to somebody else. Yeah, in fact, it's probably even good to give it to somebody else. But what they're talking about here is, I feel, my interpretation, is what they're basically saying is don't do the five wrong livelihoods or any wrong livelihood so that you can be generous. Okay? So don't have the idea of, well, I want to give such and such amount of money because then I'm going to look good, and so I don't have this much money, so how about if I cheat somebody and I get it and then I give it? Yeah, right. Like that. So that's how I interpret what this means. Okay, that's my personal opinion. Because it does seem to me, you know, if you really kind of, because sometimes we do that, we look at our own behavior and say, wow, what did I do? This just doesn't seem right. And then we feel like it's actually an act of purification to give the thing away that we got in, you know, not very nice ways. Also, when we give, it's good to give good quality things. Okay, so don't give, you know, the things that are rotting and ready to fall apart and, you know, I'm so generous at Christmas time, I'm going to give away all my old clothes so that I can buy new clothes, you know. So this thing of giving, like I'm going to give away all the old stuff so that I can buy new stuff, you know, again, something we're not really giving, basically, we're, you know, recycling things, but you know, which is better than throwing in the garbage. But again, there's not really the generous motivation there because we're still looking out of, well, now my closets are empty so I can really justify going to the mall and buying a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm going to buy the new stuff for me and other people are going to get the old stuff. I mean, why shouldn't other people get the old stuff? I mean, the new stuff. And we keep the old stuff. Yeah. And so again, you know, like when we make offerings on the shrine, don't keep the best things. I'm going to keep the prettiest bananas and apples and things for myself, and I'm going to give the kind of old ones to the Buddha. And, you know, Buddha has equanimity. He won't mind if, you know, the apples are, you know, moldy or something. Yeah. So instead of thinking like that, just to, you know, to really look for the good quality and develop a sense of joy and happiness in giving really nice things. Yeah. Because I think that's where the giving comes, where there's the wish, where there's the happiness. And so it's really a very essential practice, because if we can get in touch with how much we like to receive nice things, and then if we can develop the feeling of how nice it is to give those same things because other people get to receive them, then, you know, a much different kind of feeling comes in, and it's really kind of nice. And so, you know, I mean, when we're novices, maybe we have to practice, you know, giving old things. Yeah, we give the remnants of the vegetables to the worms, you know, maybe something like that. But to really try and practice giving things that we like, not just giving things to clear out space, but giving the things that we like, giving the things that mean a lot to us, because we want other people to enjoy those things too. Yeah? Giving nice quality things because it makes other people happy. Yeah? And so to recognize that when we can train our mind in this way, it's something that benefits others, but it's also something that benefits ourselves because it frees us from the prison of miserliness. Yeah? And that prison of miserliness is something that, you know, has really tortured us from beginningless time. And the miserliness, of course, you know, miserliness attachment, they're the things that really impede the generosity, because the mind is always saying, well, if I give, then I won't have. And, you know, that mind is so full of fear, isn't it? If I give, I won't have. Of course, if I keep it, I'm still going to be afraid of not having it. I'm still going to be afraid of losing it. So that miserly mind's quite fearful, and we might even stockpile lots and lots of stuff, but we never feel secure enough, you know, because the mind is always, oh, but I won't have, I may not have, you know, so worried about these things. And so even we have a lot, you know, mind isn't happy. And so it becomes very difficult to fulfill the miserly mind. Yeah, it becomes, in fact, completely impossible. Because the miserly mind says, well, I've got to save this for myself because, you know, what will happen if I don't have it? And then I also need this and I also need this and I can't give these things away because then I won't have them. You know? So we get really, really bound up in this fear. And sometimes we're so miserly that we can't even use the things ourselves. Yeah? You know?
I may never have another one again.
Exactly, yeah. It's like we get something really beautiful, but if I use it, I might get it dirty or I might break it or whatever. So we have this incredible, beautiful thing and it sits in the closet because we're so afraid, even of ourselves using it, that it's going to get ruined or spoiled or lost. Yeah. I mean, it's just incredible how the mind thinks sometimes. So we hoard away all these things in our closet that we never look at, we never see, but we can't use them ourselves, let alone give them away. So, I mean, that's really what the miserly mind does. It's just completely like this, you know, squeezing. It's like, you know, maybe like one of those corsets that just, you know, more and more uncomfortable. Okay. So to really free ourselves from that miserly mind, to learn to take delight in sharing and giving and realizing, you know, like I was saying before, what's the difference between giving it to this hand that's attached to my body and giving it to this hand that's attached to somebody else's body? It really doesn't matter, you know. And so to have that joy. If we are having a lot of difficulty with miserliness, you know, then we're going to need to apply some antidotes. So one antidote is just kind of reflecting on the advantages of generosity and the disadvantages of not being generous. Yeah, very simple antidote, yeah. And just sitting yourself down on the cushion and kind of saying, well, what are the results of not giving and what are the results of giving? Okay, well, if I don't give, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm miserable, I'm bound up, I'm tight, I'm fearful. You know, what happens to me in future lives? Well, I won't have resources in future life because I haven't created the cause for it. You know, other people are not going to want to be near me because I'm always thinking of myself and, you know, making the universe revolve around me and my needs and my wants. Now, it's going to be impossible for me to attain enlightenment because you've never heard of a stingy Buddha before. And, you know, I'm just all bound up in being stingy. And so, to just sit down and kind of reflect, what are the results of this miserly attitude? Where do they take me? Yeah. And then sit and reflect, well, what are the results of being generous? Well, if I can really be generous, my heart's going to be free. And if I'm generous, the other person's going to be happy. And I'm also going to create a lot of positive potential that will bring about wealth in future lives, which will, you know, make me comfortable and also make it so that I can be more generous in future lives. And I'm also going to create positive potential that I can dedicate to becoming enlightened for others' benefit. You know? And so we just kind of sit and just really think about this. I just went through them quickly, but really think about it. You know, what are the results of not giving? What are the results of giving? And then in that way, you know, kind of through understanding, it becomes really clear, you know, what is the best course of action to take, not only for ourselves, but also for others. Okay? So that's very different than the mind that says, I should give, I should give, I should give. Yeah? Because if we sit there and should ourselves a lot, sometimes we might give, but then our heart isn't in it. We're giving because we feel obliged, because we feel guilty, you know, in some way like that. And that, again, you know, the giving is really tainted. But if we seriously think about the advantages and disadvantages, then the giving becomes much more natural. It's not something that we should do, but it's something that we understand and so we want to do. Okay, so as in all the practices, understanding is really, really important. Another thing to do if we're having a lot of problem with miserliness is to contemplate impermanence and to think, okay, I'm holding on so tightly to this thing, you know, this is my thing, yeah, but look at it, it's totally impermanent. Yeah, moment by moment it's changing. Moment by moment it's in the process of decaying and getting old. So if I hold on to it with attachment, I'm still not going to be able to make it last forever. Okay? So someday or another it's going to end. So why not give it away now while it's in good shape and somebody else can benefit and I can enrich my mind through positive potential? Why not do that than sitting there holding on to this thing that one day in and of itself is going to end? And so really, you know, thinking about that. And that's very helpful, you know, to all these things. We look around in our house, we're so attached, I can't give that. And to think of either the impermanence of the object or the impermanence of our relationship with it. You know, someday I'm going to die and I'm not going to have this anymore. My relationship with this thing is impermanent. I'm going to die someday and I'm moving out of this house for good. Yeah? And when I die, I'm not going to have the time to, you know, kind of give everything away then. And since I don't really know when I'm going to die, why not give some of it away right now? You know, it makes other people happy, and sometime or another I'm going to have to separate from it anyway. So why not give it now? Yeah? And to just really recognize that anything that, you know, our mind seems so stuck to, we're not going to have forever. You know, it's totally impossible. And so I personally find that kind of reflection really, really beneficial, really helpful, because then it's kind of, when you think, well, someday I'm going to have to separate from this thing anyway, then why am I getting so wrapped around it right now? Yeah, what's the use? What's the purpose? This just doesn't make any sense. Yeah, and if it's so nice, better to give, you know, create so much good energy, positive potential, makes the other person happy, why not? And so training the mind in this way. Yeah? So again, that's very different than, you know, giving ourselves this, you know, super ego parental lecture about how stingy we are. You know, that's not what applying the antidote is. Applying the antidote is really understanding in our heart and then wanting to give. Okay, so that's, also when we give, there's certain people that we give to where they say it's, you know, especially good to try and make an effort to give to these people. And one is the poor and the needy, okay, so they become kind of special objects of giving because of their need, okay, and special objects of giving, you know, refers not only to that person, what that person does with it, but also the fact that we create a lot, you know, they say we create more positive potential when we give to that person than when we give to somebody else. You know, so just pay special attention. So the poor and needy because they give. If we give to Aryas, people on the path of seeing who have realized emptiness directly, okay, so the what you might call Buddhist saints, you know, people who have this level of realization, then again it becomes very powerful because of that person's level of realization. Or if you give to a bodhisattva, it becomes very powerful because that person, due to their loving kindness, will use the thing again for the benefit of sentient beings. If you give to your dharma teachers, it's also very good, you know, because of that special relationship and the kindness. You know, if you give to your parents, again, too, because of the kindness of our parents and giving us this body and bringing us up, then, you know, they become a particularly potent object of our gifts. Okay? So to pay attention to that kind of thing. Now, again, this, I feel sometimes in Asia this gets abused in some way. Because they talk, you know, about kind of special people to give to and special times to give. You know, like it's really good to give on the four special days in the Buddhist year, you know, the Enlightenment Day and the Turning of the Wheel, Dharma Wheel Day, you know. It's very good to give on full and new moons. And so sometimes what you see happening in Asia is that, you know, people won't give. And then when it's Buddha's birthday, you know, they go and they give all the beggars something. Yeah, because it's kind of the business person's mind of, well, this is a special day, and I'm going to get more merit, so I'm going to give. Yeah. And then, you know, but then the other days, then the day after the Buddha's birthday, they won't give to the beggars anymore. So I've had some people come and say to me, this seems rather materialistic, doesn't it? You know, you give one day, not to the next, or, you know, you give to one person because you're going to collect more money, but you're not going to, you're going to give to this person because you collect more merit, but you're not going to give to that person because you don't get as much merit. Isn't that kind of wrong motivation? And I think my teachers might say something different. My personal feeling is there's many different levels of motivation, okay? And compared with the bodhicitta motivation, that motivation is definitely rather self-centered and limited. Yeah? Because it's basically looking at positive potential and merit as a business commodity and how you can get the most of it. Okay? So compared to this really generous mind of bodhicitta, that motivation just really, it loses out. It pales in comparison. But when you think of some people's minds and the fact that they probably would never give, but if you tell them if they gave one special day, they get special merit, then at least that one day out of the other 365, they will give. Yeah. Or if you tell them they get special merit by giving to a particular person or, you know, like this and that, then at least they make an effort to be generous to that person. Whereas if they didn't get that, then they probably wouldn't give to anybody at all. Yeah. So I think in that kind of context, these kinds of things make sense. Yeah. But from a broader perspective, you know, we shouldn't start thinking of, well, you know, I'll give on Buddha's birthday, but I'm not going to give on the other days. Yeah, you know, or I'll give money to these people because I get special merit, but I'm not going to give to these people because I won't get as much. You know, I think really to my own personal opinion on this, you know, again, my teachers might disagree, but I really feel that the thing is to develop the heart of giving and not worry so much about am I going to get so much merit or not. You know, that to have enough bodhicitta that we're willing to sacrifice getting that much merit in order to benefit the people. Yeah? For example, one thing that happens in the Tibetan community is they say that the more vows somebody has, then the more merit you get by giving to them. So because the full ordination for women didn't spread to Tibet, only the novice ordination, then the women have 10 vows, and the monks usually have, you know, 353. So then people think, well, I'm going to get more money for giving to the monks. And then everybody gives tons of money to the monks and not very much to the nuns. Yeah? Because of this kind of mind that says, well, I get more merit by giving to these people than to these people. You know. Of course, when I point out that the fully ordained nuns have more vows than the monks, then somehow they don't quite feel the same. You know, about this thing with the more... you should give to the people with the more vows than the most vows. Yeah? Yeah. I think, You know, I mean, you're saying kind of who made all this up to start with. I think why, for example, the full and new moon came is because a few reasons. One is, you know, there is some kind of special energy on full and moon, new moon. You know, sometimes people have different kinds of energy. And so to make an effort to do virtuous practices those days becomes a little bit more potent. You know, for example, the police department discovered that there's more homicides on full moon days than in, you know, other days. So if you take the eight precepts that day, you know, it's like you're really going against kind of even the influence there.
So when you say
oh, no, nobody gives
merit.
It. No, nobody it nobody it's gives you merit.
Itself,
no,
right?
Nobody else is giving it to you. Uh-uh. You know, Buddha's not sitting there with kind of gold stars, and, you know, and there's no kind of ledger. There's no ledger. You know, how many merits do you have and how many demerits do you have and where are you going to go, up or down?
So it really isn't any merit that is received.
Yeah, well, I think,
or
a new moon. There, you know, because of the power astrologically, what's going on in the day, maybe there's some kind of external factor. I think more it is a sociological factor in that on those days were the days when the monastic communities gathered together and recited their vows. Someone's mind. Yeah. And he said, if you think this is the Buddha's enlightenment day, and you have this faith in the Buddha, and you're remembering the Buddha, and the kindness of the Buddha, and you really feel that in your heart, and then you give on that day, then that whole feeling in your heart is what creates the positive potential. And that made a lot more sense to me. Yeah? Right. And also, I mean, for example, they say that if you give to somebody imagining that that person's the Buddha, it's the same merit as actually giving to the Buddha. Yeah? So I think, you know, whether we give to our parents or whether we give to our aunts and uncles, you know, whether we give to this person with so many vows or that person without those vows, if we look at that person as the Buddha and think that we're giving to the Buddha, I think then, you know, it really enriches the whole process.
Yeah. Well, something like the forces of say the new moon and the full moon.
Yeah. I think, you know, if we really make an effort to have that meaning develop each day, that it would be the same. I know for myself that I do feel different on the Buddha's enlightenment day because usually the rest of the days I forget to think about it. Mm-hmm. But that day I do make an effort. Mm-hmm. So I can see it from that point of view because one day a year I do make the effort to remember that. Yeah. No, there's four great days in the year where you accumulate special positive potential. One is the 15th of the first month because that's a day that the Buddha had this kind. There were a bunch of people who didn't believe, and they challenged Buddha to a competition of magical powers, and he didn't want to do it, but at the end he did, and of course the Buddha won, so these 500 people converted to Buddhism. So that's one of the special days where things multiply. And then the second one is the full moon of the fourth month, and that's the anniversary of the Buddha's birth, death, birth, parinirvana, and enlightenment. Although many traditions say that the birth was a different day. People have all different sorts of times when they say Buddha's birth was. So not even all the Tibetan traditions agree on the birth. But anyway, all agree that the enlightenment day is the 15th of the fourth month. And then 7 weeks after that is the anniversary of the first teaching when the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths, the first turning of the Dharma wheel. So that, again, very potent because of what happened. And then the last one is Labhap Duchen when Buddha descended from the god realm of the 33 gods back to the earth, because there was a thing in ancient India where during the monsoon season for those three months, the monks and nuns did retreat and they weren't allowed to move around. And so one rainy season, the Buddha went up to this god realm of the 33 because that's where his mother had been reborn. And he spent the whole summer giving her teachings, you know, and repaying her kindness. So naturally people here missed him very much. And so when he came back down, then that was, you know, a time of big celebration. So that, again, is one of the special days. That's why sometimes you might see on a certain Buddhist artwork, you see like some golden stairs and the Buddha's walking down these golden stairs. They say that's how he came down from the God realm of the 30th day, kind of golden escalator. Okay, so those are like four special days where the positive potential is multiplied many, many times. Okay, and that one happened at the end of the rainy season, which is sometime in the autumn. I'll have to check the calendar.